Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to Food and Loathing, the weekly podcast obsessed with all the great things to eat and drink in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, where Mother Nature can't seem to decide whether spring has sprung quite yet. It's feeling nice out there today.
It's like 80 something degrees today.
I know. My jacket's actually off for a change.
It is.
You know, that's, I got to start reassigning things to different pockets.
Right.
Jacket weather changes. Like, where am I going to keep this?
I know. I got to put all my sweaters away now.
But I turned on some of the Neon Feast advertising for today for best alfresco restaurants.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be turning that off for the weekend because it doesn't look like alfresco season this weekend. That's why I check the weather for shit like that. Hey, if you're trying to figure out who the fuck we are, well, how'd you get on this podcast to begin with? But I'm Al Mancini. My co-host is Samantha Gemini Stevens. We're coming to you this week from the brand new Wino. And we'll talk about the spelling of that, but Wino in the Uncommon Project on Durango Drive. And yeah, we're here as they're setting up for their grand opening party, which is way cool because space is fucking gorgeous.
It's amazing. Oh my God. I mean, the pictures don't do it justice.
And I have a feeling if I knew anything about wine at all, that I'd be very impressed with these things.
Oh yeah, you would.
About me, all these bottles. But as I'm a dumb man and don't know much, you're going to have to handle because, by the way, we are here. Who am I here with? Okay, so look, that's who we are. I'm a 20-year veteran food writer and the creator of the Neon Feast Restaurant Guide, where local food experts share their recommendations on where to eat in Las Vegas. Samantha Gemini Stevens, my co-host, is a bit less weathered than I, but a seasoned food writer in her own right, and the editor-in-chief of neonnews.vegas, where you can find news on the local dining scene. We are going to be joined very shortly by our host for this episode, two of the people behind Wino, Chef Sean McLean and sommelier Nick Hetzel. And yeah, man, this place is beautiful.
It's amazing.
I'm loving the vibe of it in here.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know shit about wine, but it feels cool that if I wanted to come in, it feels very upscale.
But at the same time, super cozy. Like, think about where we're sitting and look at some of the seating around you. The windows are nice and open. Just a little bit of a tint, but you still get that outside.
It's just bathed in white.
Yeah.
And all those, you know, white is the new rich people's color, apparently, which is why it's probably great that I only wear black. It's just, it's gorgeous.
I love that the lighting is super soft glow. And yeah, it just... It is super elegant, but it doesn't feel pretentious.
Yes. So very cool. So we're going to be talking all about it in probably about 10 or 15 minutes. But we have a lot of show to get through before we can get to that. And not a lot of time to do it because, as I said, these guys are getting ready for a grand opening party. So we got to roll through
that. Yeah.
With that said, I'm thinking we dispense with some of the social jibber jabber up front and get right into some discussions of where we've been eating. Is that cool with you, Gemini?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, let's do it. Where you been dining?
Oh, well, so I'll try and make this really quick. I got a little bit of stuff. Last Wednesday, we got together with our friends for our monthly Cooking with Gemini Supper Club. Our theme was Irish dishes, and we had a bountiful meal. A couple of my favorites were a white sausage with Irish cheddar and a marmalade. I made a Colcannon that impressed even people who don't like Colcannon, which is a mashed potato and cabbage dish.
I don't think I've ever had that. I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, Irish potatoes on crack. It's like Irish butter, and I added bacon and scallions and things like that. I also added some boursin cheese, made it really rich. Just all kinds of meals, great desserts, great wine. So just shout out to those guys. Thursday night, we had dinner from Mama Christina of This Mama's House. She popped up at the 00 Pie and Pub.
Yeah.
And
pop-up series is like fantastic.
Oh, it's amazing.
There,
I miss so Josh good. Smith. Brian Howard's coming up soon. There was this beautiful watercress and dry roasted anchovy salad. The pizza was called Bo Co, if I'm pronouncing that right. And it was short rib and red sauce, and it came with a consomme dip. Just amazing. And then Mama makes some of the best desserts, a Vietnamese egg coffee tart. The pastry case was perfect. The custard was perfect. I would not change a damn thing.
Yum.
And I'm not usually that much of a dessert person. Saturday, we hit the soft opening of Crush Pad. That's a new wine bar. It's sitting in a wine bar. On Sahara in the old French cellar by Partage Space. They've got great selections, a few nibbles, and a super casual, cozy vibe. They've really opened up the space, made it a little bit darker, but you still have all those big windows. They had an artist come in and do some spray paint art on one of the walls. It's a beautiful mural. And it's just really kind of casual and just your neighborhood, but still really fun wine bar.
They've always been trying to find a way to take a more casual aspect of Partage. By the way, if people aren't familiar, Partage...
It's not from Partage.
But this, it's not by them.
No, it's their old space.
I thought you were saying they converted their old space. Okay, so this
This is Brian Dinda and his wife, Jessica, who I met Dinda when he was working at Ada's years ago. That's when he first came to Vegas.
Okay.
And he's actually an engineer by training, and she's an organic chemist, and they're both on, you know, high sommeliers with CMS, and this is just something they've been trying to do for years. And so after Ada's, he went to Garage East, and now he's opened his own local spot, and he lives on this side of that side of town as well. So
wine bar's having a moment in Las Vegas.
They are,
it feels, especially off the strip.
And I love that we're sitting here because, again, it's just amazing.
So the guys from Partage abandoned that space, huh? So they're one operation.
They have right the now, Grand Crew by Partage next door to the original Partage space, and they've moved the wine bar and the wine club over to that, along with other special events and things that they have there.
Gotcha.
Sunday, I know you went too, but I missed
you. You got to tell me all about wine. You're going to have to handle this conversation
this
afternoon.
Sunday, we did go to the DW Bistro for the gospel brunch.
Oh, hell yeah.
I missed you because we couldn't stay for the gospel part, but the brunch was amazing. Super simple, but really delicious. And they offered a gorgeous smoked salmon spread, their signature goat cheese tart, which I am so in love with. A whole bunch of breakfast and lunch items, different meats, depending on what you wanted, what you didn't want, and a ton of gorgeous desserts. Taking photos, I was so happy just taking the pictures of the desserts. Again, I don't eat much of them, but I love looking at them.
Well, you missed a great performance by Sky D. Miles.
Yeah.
And she had, of course, a full gospel choir with her. A lot of her friends came out and sang. And it's always a great party. They've done this like 5 times.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do it in the fall. Sometimes they do it in the spring. This was a really emotional one. And Bryce spoke about this. So, you know, I'm not stepping out of school, but he's lost both of his parents since the last time they did this. He's been in a place where, you know, he really needs the support of his family and friends, as we all often do. And, you know, that's DW Bistro, and their gospel brunches have always been about that.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, coming together in that Southern tradition of, you know, like commiserating, lifting each other up, helping each other out, you know, real sense of community. Of course they do that at DW Bistro all year round, but to do it in that courtyard with the music, with people just, you know, go up and hug somebody that, you know, I mean,
exactly.
You know, say hi to somebody that you don't know, I should say. Don't go hugging strangers. I don't want to be in trouble for that. But, you know, like, so it was great.
Yeah, we met a lot of great new people. The camaraderie was instant the minute people were walking through that beautiful floral area where you got the champagne. Communal tables really made it fun and lively so you can talk to people. I'd hope to see more of those because it was just super exciting, even having missed the show. So Monday I made my way over to Donatique in the Venetian and tasted some amazing donuts. I got to throw this out there. I did not see a plain cake.
If Rich goes to Donuts, he can ask for a plain cake donut. I would fucking disown him. So, Jesus Christ.
I love you, Rich. but there is a massive selection. Right now, they have about 19 or so custom flavors. The decor is beautiful. Super spring floral and fruits abound right now. Gorgeous handmade artwork on so many of these choices. And they even have other goodies like cookies and macarons and mini cakes and macaroons, not just macarons. And just so many things are available. My favorites were...
Macarons being the French one where you
correct,
get the little
with
cake
little cookie
and the little bit of
and
filling.
The, yep.
Then macaroons. See, for me, I grew up with macaroon was a coconut cookie.
Yes,
is that
exactly.
What it is to you?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, some in chocolate, some not. I like them both ways. So my favorites so far were the yuzu blueberry, and a tiramisu. Even the heavy stuff was super light, really delicious, really well done. It's got a lovely, almost European vibe going throughout the place that makes it kind of cozy and kind of, It's near the Love Sign, which is like one of the most Instagrammed things in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And for such a busy space, it is so nice and quiet in there. So yeah. You can have a coffee and a dessert.
Are you able to speak to who's running that place right now?
Well, so I'm working on that. Okay. So
that's
I'm working with their PR company because, you know, most of us, who know the industry know that Karis Kiwanis started there. And
she opened that space.
Yeah. Yes.
And she was out actively promoting for a long time before it ever opened.
Yep. She was at Picnic in the Alley last year.
Yeah. All that stuff. And then, you know, I saw her maybe a month after they opened and I was like, oh, how's everything going? She's like, I left. And I thought she meant she just left the place that day because she worked an 18-hour day, but she's no longer with the company.
Yeah. So the person I talked to, I asked them, I said, you know, I know that Karis isn't here anymore. You know, who's your pastry chef, who's kind of running the joint. And the press release says it is chef driven, but I have been told that there is no actual like chef running the place at the moment.
Okay.
So I'm digging into that because I am curious. Everything is still amazing.
Credit
where it's due. More about what's going on.
Okay.
So if you do go, donuts range from $4 to $10 and they are massive.
Cool.
I truly believe there is something there for everyone. And, like we said, I'm digging into it. So check out neonnews.vegas for photos and more of that story as I get it.
Awesome. Is that it for you?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so where have I been eating? Oh, man, I'm going to start with the biggest restaurant opening of the year so far, the new Esther's Kitchen in the Arts District. Now, look, you already know we love James Trees. We love Esther's. In fact, I think he deserves all the media attention he's been getting for this new opening, and it has been significant. We recorded a podcast at the new location. You probably heard it. If not, go the fuck back and listen. What are you doing? but after this one, because this one's going to be fun. Lots of our friends work there, so we are very biased in favor of Esther's Kitchen. I mean, like, let's go out there.
Yeah.
But I haven't yet discussed my experiences there beyond the recording session. So I wanted to give them a little time to settle in before I started judging them. So I waited a couple of weeks before I went in for brunch with my wife, Sue, as well as a former Las Vegas writer and that writer's spouse and child. Then a week later, I returned for dinner with Sue and a current Las Vegas food writer and that writer's spouse. So the consensus, drum roll. And a lot of this isn't going to be a big surprise. Some of it may be. Love the food. Love the room. Love the ambiance. And I probably should have waited a few more weeks to visit until they got the service totally locked in.
Really?
Look, it is tough to open a new place, tougher still when you do it with a lot of hoopla. When you're trying to recreate an intimate restaurant in a space that is triple maybe its size, maybe more, it can be tough. So you're going to need to train new people under a blindingly bright spotlight right now for these guys. And it's going to take a while, which is why I waited. They're not quite there yet. It's not huge things. It's a lot of little things. Some of them are so small you feel silly mentioning them. But hospitality is a vibe. And when it doesn't click, it takes you from going to that you know, taking you above like a B experience to an A experience.
Yeah.
It takes you down, from an A experience to a B experience when that hospitality just isn't clicking the way that you want it to. And that's kind of how I was feeling. From some slow service at brunch to them being really confused by me arriving early for dinner and asking to be seated at the bar to order an appetizer, which then arrived just before I got seated and they weren't to move it and all that. It didn't feel like a well-oiled machine that I've come to expect from Esther's or James. Look, I am not worried. It was not enough to negate two great meals with friends.
Absolutely.
We had a great time. We loved it there. To me, this is like when the Golden Knights were sputtering a little bit this season, but I was still confident they were going to be on the pretty legit playoff run, right? Which, you know, it's frustrating when something's not right there yet. But, you know, I kept going to games and cheering. Last night I watched them 6-3 win over Vancouver.
Yeah, baby.
This restaurant is going to go on a playoff run. There's no doubt. This is on a cup run. And so have a little patience with it. And that's all that I'm really saying. As for the, you know, you got to tell people that, right?
Yeah.
Is it there yet? No, it's not quite as where we want it to be. As for the food, man, I love the new pizza ovens. I've had breakfast pizza and a duck confit pizza. Both are new. Both are excellent. I had a new dish, eggs in purgatory. I love that dish just about anywhere. They do it phenomenally well. Cheesy eggs on toast are decadently rich. A touch on the salty side for some people did not bother me at all.
No, I
dug
salt.
In. I loved them. Loved their grits. Really enjoyed their spin on the classic vitella tonnato, which of course is veal and a tuna sauce.
Yes.
They do it with sweetbreads here.
Oh,
I mean, fucking sweetbreads in the Arts District, man. Who would have thunk of that just a few short years ago?
I'm so making a new reservation.
So, yeah, fucking great, right? The food's fantastic. Egg noodles with white clams were great. Truffle ricotta nudie are so rich, so decadent, so delicious.
Damn.
Did I mention the Little Gem Caesar that we all loved? And man, a truly astoundingly good pork chop, pasture raised by Pasha Mama Farms. This baby, this piggy pig, was milk fed and then finished with leftovers from the Tillamook Ice Cream Factory just before they harvest it, right? James had told me about this a while ago, and then my waiter explained it again, because the waiter definitely knew the menu. So, you know, the training's coming along. They do it with a pine nut Calabrian chili crisp and serve it with a sort of casserole of beans and greens.
Sure.
Really, really outstanding dish. Look, I'm going to say James Trees and I have never seen eye to eye on carbonara, so I didn't really try it when my friend ordered it. She was on my side, a little too smooth, the sauce a bit too liquid for our personal taste, but that's a matter of taste, man. I encourage everybody to go out and try that dish, weigh it, let me know if you're with him or you're with me on that. Similarly, a puttanesca preparation was a bit too upscale for me. I mean,
really?
I like the makeshift horse sauce that puttanesca is supposed to be. That's what it means.
Yeah.
That's the translation, made with dried ingredients from a working girl's pantry, right? Right? Like, so, you know, when you kind of upscale it, I guess I sort of lose out a little bit, you know, making it too good, but fucking good dish nonetheless. Yeah, so that is about it on Esther's. No reason not to go now if you're itching to go. You're going to have a great meal, but I expect things are going to be running considerably smoother if you give them maybe two more weeks of working out the kinks. So there you go on that one. See if I could show my face in the Arts District again after that. Other recent visits for me, I keep these a lot shorter. Dinner with friends at Anima by EDO was great.
Oh,
lots of familiar dishes there that I've already told you about, so I'm not going to go into them again. It's the first time in a long time I've had their carpaccio, which is individual slices of 30-day dry-aged strip loin, and some cheese espuma with white truffle vinaigrette over these individual puffs of puree bread.
Yes.
Give that a shot if you haven't had it. I went to two grand opening parties the same night. First up, new Blue Ribbon Sushi location in Green Valley Ranch. The place is fucking gorgeous. Great party. Lots of people there, but a lot of room to hang out and sit down, grab a table, speak to your friends, enjoy the food. And I also got to speak to chef founder Bruce Bromberg, starting off with how it feels to open.
I mean, it feels amazing to be open. We've been working really hard on this project for a couple of years now. It happened really through our partnership and our relationship with Stations, and we've been up in Red Rock now for seven, eight years, I think, now. So, yeah, one thing came to another, and we've just had a really positive, amazing run on that side of town and a great relationship with the Fertitas and Stations Casino. So it was kind of a natural progression of getting to this side of town.
There was a big question mark in my mind when you opened at Red Rock. And I say this as somebody who loves Blue Ribbon, who's loved the brand since you've been in Las Vegas. And I knew you in New York a little, but I've loved you since you've been in Las Vegas. But I was afraid that it was going to be almost too high-end, too elevated sushi for the burbs, because you had only been on the Strip before. So what did you learn about going out to the burbs? And how has the market changed? Is it easier now?
Oh, yeah, the market has changed. It's changed a lot in the last number of years. It was a learning curve for us in the beginning. We were trying to find our, you know, our feet and exactly what to do coming from the Strip, going out to Summerlin. But at the end of the day, we've built an amazingly strong clientele. And there's people, there's really, you know, great foodies out in the burbs, too. So, and sushi's one of those things that kind of transcends everything, right? It has to be quality. And I think we've found a great clientele, and here we're seeing the same thing 3 days in.
I mean, I think it's amazing that the Blue Ribbon brand is now not just a tourist attractive brand, but a brand that is attractive to Las Vegas locals.
Yeah, I mean, look, we started in New York in a tiny little, you know, 48-seat restaurant on a side street in, you know, in Soho. We've always been a village restaurant, even when we opened at Cosmo, right? We wound up having the most local clientele coming in of any of the restaurants. It's just because I think we connect. You have to connect. And if you want to be a neighborhood restaurant, if you want to have repeat visitors, you have to connect with your clientele. You have to be passionate about the food. You have to be passionate about hospitality. And Stations is all about that at the end of the day. They let us really do what we wanted to do. And I think it's part of the station's culture. It's part of the Blue Ribbon culture. So it's actually been a really amazing partnership for these last couple of years.
Have you ever given any thought to bringing any of the other Blue Ribbon concepts out into the Vegas burbs?
If we could ever find a space big enough for Brooklyn Bowl in the burbs, I don't know if we could. We have. I mean, we've started to get, we have good roots here at this point. So I think the future is bright for us. And as Vegas becomes more and more of a food town, not just a strip food town, right? You've seen it. I've seen it in the last 14 years since Cosmo. It was not a wasteland, but it wasn't part of the, the discussion.
Anything new on the menu here that people may not have seen at the other restaurants?
Yeah, one of the really fun things is we're doing these sizzling fried rice dishes, tobanyaki style dishes. We've always had the oxtail marmalade, the oxtail and bone marrow fried rice, but now we're doing an array of tobanyaki fried rice dishes in the sizzling platter, and that's fun, like garlic shrimp and mushroom fried rice, so it's been pretty cool. And yes, of course, our sushi chefs are always coming up with new creations.
I went straight from there to a star-studded celebrity-packed opening for Emmett's on the Strip. Very glamorous, not much of a feel for the restaurant yet, on lots of picture taking on red carpets kind of thing, lots of famous athletes that I don't recognize because I never followed sports as a kid, but really fucking very high profile. So I look forward to getting in there and actually trying the food. And we talked about gospel brunch. I think that is about it, right? Look, I got the same damn page of the notes coming after me, so I don't know what else to say. I can tell you that coming up in the news, we have conversations with Naked City's Chris Palmieri, Evil Pie's Richard Verhagen, and Vegas on Strip creator Eric Gladstone. Unless I missed anything,
no.
News is coming. We've got our host coming up next.
Yeah.
This is Food and Loathing. Would you like a free dinner for two at Joël Robuchon, the only Las Vegas restaurant ever awarded 3 Michelin stars? That's the grand prize in Neon Feast's photo upload sweepstakes. To enter, just go to the Neon Feast app or website and find the link to the photo upload sweepstakes page right up at the top with that picture of the Robuchon dining room. Check out the approximately 90 restaurants and bars that are listed on that page. These are the only restaurants and bars participating in the contest because they're the only ones that have activated the photo galleries on their Neon Feast listings. So find one you like, pay them a visit, snap a photo of some food, a beverage, or just you standing outside in front of their sign, and use the app or website to upload it to their gallery. Limit one entry per email address per day, one for a particular restaurant or bar per month. Find complete rules and details on no purchase mail-in entries at neonfeast.com/contest. And as promised, joining us for this section, we have Sean McClain and Nick Hetzel of this beautiful Wino Wine Bar in Uncommons that we're sitting in. But a little bit of background, and these people need no introduction if you're a Las Vegas foodie. But for those who may be just tuning in, Chef Sean McClain, no stranger to great Las Vegas restaurants, dating all the way back to Sage in the Cosmopolitan and 550 Pizza. But right now he operates Libertine Social, Bala Italian Soul, Libertine Social, of course, in Mandalay Bay, Bala Italian Soul, which I think is one of the greatest Italian restaurants on the Strip right now. Such a fun place to hang out. And of course, now Wino. And his partner in this project, or one of his partners in this project, is Nick Hetzel. You may remember him. I don't know what's going on with my talking today. You may also remember him from Sage. And he was a 2-time recipient of Best Sommelier in Las Vegas in 2012 and 2013. Am I getting that right, Nick?
You are, and you're dating us, but yes. Yeah.
Dude, no.
I was young and fresh back then. Yeah.
I wasn't. I was already old and grizzled. So imagine now. Well, gentlemen, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you. Thanks for having us in your space.
Oh, thanks. Great to have you here. As always a pleasure to chat.
Yeah, it's always great to talk to you. So I guess I'm going to start with you, Chef. There was a time when you first came to Las Vegas when I would ask every chef, when are you guys ever going to go off the strip? When are you guys going to discover the Las Vegas suburbs? And here you are, man. What went into that decision and what made you think it was time?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes fate just has something to do with it. But, you know, it wouldn't be without looking and considering a lot of things over these years. We arrived in town in 2009 to open Aria, to open Sage. Off strip has just grown leaps and bounds. This community is unbelievable. And we've been able to just kind of see that year after year. So I think it's just a matter of just trying to find the right situation. And, you know, I know this idea has been ruminating with Nick, with Richard and Sarah for some years. And
we should mention Richard Camerata and Sarah Camerata are your other partners in this.
Yep.
Richard, of course, has been working with you forever.
Yep. He did his internship for me back in 99. So if you really want to date somebody.
Oh, wow.
And you also see him a lot down at Soul Belly Barbecue too, Richard.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Richard came out in 2009 as... you know, as Sarah says, she came kicking and screaming, but, you know, 2 years in, absolutely fell in love with the community and, you know, just wouldn't be anywhere else. So I'm obviously privileged to have them here, to have them as partners, and now have Nick in this amazing project, which we're super proud of and, you know, just can't wait for, you know, just to get exposure throughout the city and really, you know, we felt was kind of a need and a niche in the market.
When somebody like me hears wine bar, I'm not a big wine drinker. I mean, first of all, I'm not a drinker at all anymore. But even when I did drink, I did not drink wine a lot. So even when I sip, I don't sip a lot of wine. But I always wonder what you mean. When somebody tells me it's a wine bar, what's the vibe going to be like? Is there going to be food served? Is it going to be a place you go for a meal? Is it just a place that you go to hang out? Is it a place that you go to buy, you know, cases and take home, right? So could either one of you gentlemen...
Explain
I think we're done here. He just nailed it. Perfect. Awesome.
What is wine now, seriously?
I'll let Nick.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely put a pin on it. So, you know, many, many years ago, back in... 2012, 2013, when I was studying for some high-level wine accreditations, you know, I had to buy a lot of wine to practice blind tasting. And, you know, at that time especially, you know, it's evolved in this city for sure, like much has. But that time, there really wasn't a place to buy, you know, classic examples of wines in a retail setting. So I ended up buying most of my wine that I use for blinds from California and retailers there. And so, you know, there was a need for a place where people could buy great wine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you can combine the restaurateur experience of Sean and Richard and Sarah, you know, a bit of my wine expertise, and to your point earlier about the growing suburban nature of restaurants in the city, you know, it was a great time to partner up at the Uncommons and bring something to life. And so it's, you know, it's a combination of everything you mentioned. It's a place to hang out and drink wine and eat great food. It's a place to come in and buy wine for your house or buy gifts for your clients or anything of that nature. And also, you know, bringing a kind of restaurant, you know, wine experience that's not the same pricing models you find in many other places in this city, if you know what I'm saying. So we our pricing model is very much encouraging people to drink wine, and those that have come in have drank a lot of wine, and it's been super cool.
So where does that put this? You know, as somebody like myself, who's not a big wine drinker, you know, I always work on a rule of thumb that I assume that when I see a bottle of wine in a restaurant, it's going to be about 2.5 times to 3.5 times the price that I would find it in a liquor store. I don't know if that's even close because I don't do a lot of purchasing, but I know that it's more when I buy it in a restaurant. Right? So where does this fall? Closer to the restaurant pricing or closer to a wine store pricing or right there in the middle?
It's a little of both. Great question. Thanks. So, you know, it's obviously there's costs incurred when you're operating any sort of restaurant, and us, we're not a full-fledged restaurant. We are. I mean, the menu is amazing, and it's you can have a full meal here. But there's not maybe as many touch points as there would be that we had at Sage. So we are able to, for your dine-in experience, offer things certainly well below what you would see in a typical restaurant in terms of markups. And then the carrot on top is the 25% off if you take wine to go. So you get great pricing on both ends, whether you want to enjoy it here or take bottles home. Yeah.
So that brings me into a question. I've got some notes here that talk about a wine club. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that, you know, so for my day job, I travel the country and, you know, work for a winery, and I'm in a lot of concepts like this. And so I'm always asking the proprietors or whomever the buyer is about what things they do. And, you know, we decided for our wine clubs, we would just go with two levels. I mean, I've seen some where there's 50 different options.
Right.
And I'm like, how do you keep track of all of that? And the ones I found that were most successful really were just more kind of focused. So we do have two wine clubs. One is called The Explorer. It's $72 a month. And myself and Norman Acosta, who's an advanced sommelier, and he's the general manager here, we essentially, over the course of a month, cool things we've tasted that we think would be exciting for the Explorer Club, we'll put together for you, type up you know, some great descriptions of the wine, where it comes from, stories behind the winemaker, or what makes that wine or that region unique and cool and fun. They'll probably be pretty seasonal, you know.
And how many bottles does somebody get?
So that's two bottles.
That's great.
Once a month. Yeah, exactly. And then there's another one that's we're calling the Collector, which is quarterly. And that's $9.95 a quarter. You get six bottles. And that offers some other perks as well, with like in-home delivery, seller consultation, things of that nature. And these are more highly allocated collectible bottles that, again, typically you wouldn't find in a typical retail setting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, we will source these from our vendors and wineries, et cetera. Yeah.
People get to take advantage of your access, basically.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and just looking around the room, there are so many options here. You've got something for everybody for sure. When you entered this, did you have a particular, like, favorite style you kind of wanted to go around, or a favorite region? Or, I mean, are you focusing on natural wines? Are you focusing on, you know, carbonic stuff? Like, how did you decide what to sell, what to serve? What was the inspiration behind this selection?
Great question. And, you know, I think it's all of the restaurants I've worked in my career and wine lists I've written have generally been sort of all-encompassing, especially in Las Vegas. I mean, if you're writing a wine list on the Las Vegas Strip, you need to have something for everybody. You know, people from the Midwest that come in and like their fan favorites to, listen, brother, I'm from Iowa originally. I get it. I almost quoted Iowa on that, but that's all good. And so it's not focused on one specific thing. The one specific thing that we're focused on is providing a level of service, not only to your shopping experience, but also your dine-in experience. You're also finding wines that you typically wouldn't see in a normal retail setting, meaning Albertsons or other bigger, great, but also bigger retailers in this city. So when you kind of combine all of those things, it's like, hey, these are really exciting wines, or hey, these are super collectible. We need to get these. These are very allocated. So really, to cover the entire spectrum, yes, we do have some natural wine, but we're not a natural wine destination.
Okay.
There's a really good one of those already in the city.
There is.
And so that's not really our vibe and what we're going for. We're going to find out what you like, again, in sort of the personal nature of how we conduct our service. What are you into? Are you looking to get outside your comfort zone, or do you love your comfort zone? Cool, let's turn you on to this thing that fits in that realm, or hey, let's get super wacky. We can do all of that, right? So that's really been the mantra behind it. And then, yeah.
So you also mentioned talking about, you know, food and things like that. Mm-hmm. As far as wine bars in town, I think you have the most expansive menu, and it's not huge, but it's got great, like, tiny bites. It's got shareable plates. You've got a couple of sandwiches on there. When you decided to do those, were you thinking of particular wines first? Did you have a menu in mind and then built wines around that? How did those two come together? Because that can be tough sometimes.
Well, you know, it's very nice being in this collaboration because we can kind of compartmentalize that a little bit. I mean, I have a James Beard Award winning chef.
Exactly.
Across to me, a restaurateur, an amazing chef, Richard Camerata, and then their team that absolutely, I would imagine, I don't want to speak for you, but I knew when we did our first menu taste, I'm like, they thought about wine with every single dish they created. they didn't just think about, I'm going to make a dish. It was, is this wine friendly? For example, and I don't want to speak for you, Sean, but like the foie parfait. So those that used to come to Sage, one of our signature dishes.
Oh, the foie
was
creme
brulee. Yeah, yeah. I think my cholesterol's still high from it, right?
It was a
twist on that where there was like a grape gelée, right? It was trying to tie in more of these kind of wine elements when I first saw the menu. And that's, again, it's great to collaborate with people that are very good at what they do on the culinary side.
Just to piggyback from what Nick was saying, just in terms of approach of the wine, I mean, if you look around the styles, the weights, the acidity, there's so much going on in so many different types of wines that this just becomes open-ended. You know what I mean? There's so many things you can do.
Yeah.
It's not Italian specific, Mediterranean specific, Asian specific. But we can play with all of it. And that's the great thing about wine bar. And, you know, I think wine, to your point, you said you don't drink a lot of wine. You know, I think it's been such a cocktail-focused culture these last few years.
It has, yeah.
And I think there's always cycles. And you know, I really feel like wine will kind of have its, get back its day a little bit and pull back from some of the cocktail stuff. But I think we're poised to really show off some of that stuff. But at the end of the day, we love food. We love producing food. It matters. And so, you know, from start to finish, the care that goes into the wine and the wineries and the finished product is definitely, we want to emulate that in the kitchen. And, you know, a shout out to our kitchen crew who are amazing, Chef Johnny. And so.
So, Chef, this is, you know, for most chefs of your stature, you know, when you open a restaurant, it is all about the chef. You know, it's nice to have good wine there. It's nice to have good cocktails. It's nice to have other things, but it's all about the chef. You are already involved with Libertine Social, which is as well known for its mixologist over there, Tony Abugano, as it is for your food.
Absolutely.
Right? It's an equal partnership over there. And here, this is a wine-based place that's going to have your tremendous food. So is it natural for you to work with the beverage team and kind of be a co-star with the beverage team?
Oh, 100%. And I think, you know, wine is the hero here. And we're just here to support that and how we sell it, how we present it, how we service it, you know, and we want to do things at a very high level. But absolutely, you know, wine is the star and we're just here to support that.
But tell me a bit about that support, though. What are some of your favorite dishes on this menu,
Yes.
You know, the hamachi, a pretty straightforward, nice raw preparation of caviar, some avocado, some onion creme fraiche, smoked sturgeon. We actually use Acme out of the East Coast, smoked sturgeon, which is unbelievable. Make a rillette with that. You know, I'm a sucker for that kind of light, bright flavors. Although, so on the other side, the savory dange, which I think is a lot of fun, and this is something the kitchen team came up with, but it's a laminated dough, so it's a savory duxelle mushroom rolled in a Danish dough, brushed with a little bit of honey and truffle, so that's a nice one.
We're going to be trying all this in a couple hours.
Yeah.
A few of these are going to come out, man. Otherwise, I'll see you here tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, tell me when I can be here tomorrow.
Yes.
So you mentioned earlier, you know, you said that you wanted to fulfill a need. So not just about the wine bar itself, but the location, how did you decide and what brought you to that thing? Where did you decide the need needed to be filled? I'm skipping over my own tongue, but what did you see that was missing and why did you choose this location?
Yeah, I think I'll let Nick do that one because he is a local. And
exactly. Yeah, I've been here off and on for, you know, since 97. I moved here to go to UNLV. So I've seen the growth, which has been great. But, you know, when Richard and I, you know, first, and Sarah as well, started talking about this type of concept, it was, gosh, years ago, 7-8 years ago, something like that. And we had looked over the years at a couple of spaces. You know, Sean and Richard are very well connected and people will call them about, you know, things that come up. And nothing really ever quite clicked from a location. And then, you know, years go by and Richard, with his association with Soul Belly, had been in contact with the people at Uncommons and the conversation started again. And, you know, looking at it, I'm thinking, okay, so you're in this corridor on the 215 that you can get here really quickly from a lot of places.
Yeah. It's right at that bend in the 215, which is, and it's blowing up now.
Totally.
Yeah. And there's a lot of money in this neighborhood.
Trust me, that didn't, that crossed my mind as well. Hence, you know, the collector club, right? There's many different people to tap into. I mean, whether it's our industry people that are coming in and having fun, you know, drinking wine, they might see something that they have on their list that they love. And they're like, oh my God, this is like half the price it is on my list. Well, to have a bottle, you know, or to people that are serious collectors, or they're looking again to buy wine for their clients, you know, it's a great intersection of Las Vegas and especially the West Side. So we can tap into a lot of different places, and it felt right, you know, all glass, all north facing, so you have natural light, but not necessarily, you know, the blast of the sun that we get in the summertime. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
very cool. Damn it. So you got me so distracted there that I lost my train of thought there. So what is the price range for wine in a restaurant, in a wine bar like this, right? If I'm coming in to pick up a bottle to go home, you know, what do you need to be expecting to spend? And then how high does it go? You know, I mean, I'm assuming I'm not going to see DRC or something in here, but, you know.
Not yet, man. Give it time.
We can order it for you.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, so again, like there is no limit to that. We can source whatever our clients might want.
I mean, I see some $29
bottles. You nailed it.
Right,
yeah.
Here, right? Which is, you know, if I'm going out to pick up a bottle of wine before a party, I expect to spend at least that much, right? So you're not pricing out a novice like myself who doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, and that was part of the pricing strategy, and also like that this is not just a wine bar, it is a retail location, and you know, so that $29 bottle of wine is 25% off if you take it home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're looking at 23. That's a great price point for somebody that wants a good bottle of wine on a Tuesday night. We also have things that go up to, you know, $500, and that upper echelon level will continue to increase as we move on. But I think the bottom line on all of it will be is that it's still, for what it is, going to be well below market value. And so, yeah.
Awesome. Now, before we have to wrap this up, a couple things I really want to hit on. What are the hours going to be? And then any kind of activations in here? Will we have music, events, or is it just going to be a mellow, chill space to come and enjoy wine?
Well, if you're here, it's not mellow for sure. No, so that's
you know what? Sean's been telling you about me. You remember me.
I remember you.
You remember me from my hard drinking days. No, things have changed.
All good. No, so that's, I mean, the event thing is another huge part. And it's another great thing about being partnered at the Uncommons is that they've, you know, sort of allowed us to help utilize some of their common space as well if we want to host larger type events. But again, this is what I do for my day job. There's winemakers and winery representatives from all over the country always in town, always looking for places to showcase their wines to consumers. So that is something we have already started to dabble in a little bit. We have a really cool one coming up with Champagne Gosse on Monday night. And they'll keep coming up. Follow our social, and you'll be able to see what's online. And
you got
to
hit us with those socials.
I was
right
going to say, what's the social? What's the website?
WinoLV is winoLV.com.
And that's WINEAUX.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes.
For all you
and
people
then
from New Orleans.
Social.
I think it's the same.
Yeah.
And WinoLV.
WinoLV. Yeah. Yep.
Awesome. Chef, anything else you need to tell us about your other restaurants? You want to drop some like huge news that nobody knows about? Otherwise, we're going to let you go.
No, just so proud of the team here and so excited to be part, as you say, off strip, be, you know, yet another part of the community in a different way. And, you know, you were talking about a bottle over here and just, you know, to realize it's not a placement bottle by anybody other than our guys tasting that wine and giving that stamp of approval. So I am super confident that at any price point, any bottle in here is going to be exceptional wine.
That's
well, that is always the mark of a great sommelier, right? And I always tell people this, that if they get in a conversation with their sommelier, that somm's going to love every bottle on the wine list. They're going to, you know, whether it's the cheapest bottle on the list or the most expensive bottle on the list, you have to love it or you're not going to carry it, right?
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, wino in Uncommon's right down the street from my house. So, man, I might be developing a bit more of a taste for wine.
So easy to get here.
Coming in
we
here.
We have cups. It's cool.
One quick correction. I believe I gave the wrong location for your former restaurant, Sage. That classic eatery was located, of course, in Aria. The news is next. This is Food and Loathing.
Here you are in Vegas, you're hungry, and the choices are endless. But do you really want to trust the crowd? You can trust Neon Feast. Restaurant recommendations from real food pros sharing where they send friends and family. All that knowledge is just a download away on the Neon Feast app. You want the strip, off strip, downtown, great views, great value? Find smart, informed restaurant recommendations on the Neon Feast app and neonfeast.com.
It's time for the news, and it is impossible not to start with the sad news of 7 World Central Kitchen workers killed by an IDF airstrike in Gaza as they were trying to feed hungry people. I always try to keep politics out of this show, and I'll try here as well, because I know Chef Jose Andres never lets politics interfere with his work to feed the hungry, and I admire him for that. So this is not meant to be political per se, but this is just incredibly sad and infuriating. World Central Kitchen founder Jose Andres and his restaurants are huge parts of our local community. I admire him. I admire them incredibly. It takes a lot of guts to go into one of the most dangerous places on earth because there's an important job to be done, which is why, by the way, I always respect and thank our armed forces, regardless of whether I agree with the mission they're on.
Yeah.
It takes even more guts to go into those places without weapons, which is why I believe that every government, every military, every civilian, and even every fucking terrorist should do whatever they can to protect journalists and aid workers if you want to be judged as better than those who do not. I'm not going to debate Middle East policy here. This is a tragedy, however, and a disgrace. It hurts my heart in the same way it would hurt if someone from Nellis was involved in a tragedy while deployed, because they are our hometown people and they are out there serving our world. And World Central Kitchen as an organization is that. I also know that some local folks like Yassine at Barry's, you know, worked with some of these aid workers on an aid mission. Yeah. So this strikes close to home. My heart goes out to Chef Jose, to everyone at World Central Kitchen. I don't speak for anyone but myself when I say that Chef Jose has my personal support in his quest for answers, accountability, and change. Hunger and starvation of civilians is never an acceptable tool or byproduct of war, in my opinion, just like the sexual violence that took place in the attacks that launched the current situation are never acceptable tools or byproducts of war. We need to do better, and we need to protect those who try to do better on our behalf. That's it for me pontificating here. You can learn more about those killed and the World Central Kitchen mission and donate some money if you're so inclined at WCK.org. And I'm going to note again that all of this comes from me personally. I'm not trying to speak for Gemini or any other person that's been on this podcast today or at any other time. And I certainly welcome any thoughts that you have, or I'm happy to move along.
I think the way you put it was perfect. It's not about sides. It's not about policy. It's not about any of that. It's about taking out people who are there to help the innocent. Yeah. So I'm good.
Okay, thank you. So now, hey, let's see if I can turn the mood around.
Yeah, let's.
Our friend Eric Gladstone has set May 18th as the date for the next Vegas Unstripped Festival, and he told me a bit about that.
I'm really excited about Unstripped coming back. Every time we do it, it feels like there's a new threshold we're breaking through, and I'm really excited this year. So the big news this year will be that, first of all, it's coming back to the spring. We just felt like the fall was too crowded a time. So even though we just did one in October, we're coming right back on May 18th. We're gonna be back. It's a week after Mother's Day. We feel like that was a good open weekend to do an event like this. The weather should be beautiful, knock wood and everything else. You know how Vegas weather is.
Yeah.
But the really exciting thing is this year we're moving out of the Arts District and we're going to be at the Palms Resort. The reason for that is that the Palms really pursued us to be there, and they basically removed any possible threshold from doing it. We thought a really, really long time about doing this because the Arts District has always been kind of the heart and soul of what we wanted to do. But at the same time, there's a couple of ambitions that this festival has had that haven't really been fulfilled, and we've always been conscious of that. So as you know, this is the most ambitious food festival you can imagine. We've got all these rules that we set for ourselves. But one of them was that we really always wanted it to represent the whole city. So I always felt a little tinge of guilt that we kept doing it in the Arts District. And I know I got a light bit of feedback from other chefs sort of saying, well, why don't you do it here? Or you could do it here, or you could do it over here. And I always felt badly that the Arts District still felt like that was the center of everything. It was the right place to be. But it was also maybe a little selfish on my part, and the part of, you know, being near Esther's kitchen, obviously, because James helped me co-create the event. But so that's always been in my thought that, you know, I'd like to move it around the city. And then the Palms came. And the other aspect of it is that, you know, people will say, oh, well, you're moving to a casino. Well, it's still not on the Strip. Mm-hmm. We've already opened it up to Strip chefs. So it's not about Strip versus off Strip anymore. What it's about is local versus not local. So we want to be very clear on that messaging. This is always about local Vegas chefs who are based here, chefs who have their stake in the ground here. It will always be about that. So it's still about that. The other aspect of this that we really didn't feel we were hitting as good as we can is we've always wanted to attract a lot of visitors, more visitors to the city, to know about how amazing the food scene is here throughout the city. And kind of felt like we were limited being on the street in the Arts District or in back of Esther's to making it appealing to visitors. So now that we're at a casino, and there's hopefully going to be room packages and certainly incentives to staying overnight there or making a weekend out of it with all the other amazing restaurants that are at the Palms, that it just makes it more attractive for anyone to go. It makes it more attractive for locals too, because you can sort of like have a blast and not worry about driving home or Ubering or something like that, you know. So that's the big news. The price is still going to be $150 for everyone, all in. By the time you're hearing this, tickets should be available through VegasUnstripped.com.
There's a new charity slice at Fremont Street's Evil Pie for April and May. A double-decker slice of pizza with a pepperoni slice on top of a plain slice. It's designed by local performers, the Double Time Twins, dancers Ava and Loretta Minette, and it is to benefit the local LGBTQ center, which is a fantastic cause.
Absolutely.
I spoke with Evil Pie's Richard Verhagen about it.
The newest charity slice is the brainchild of two amazing dancers, performers, showgirls that we partner up with, Ava and Loretta, the Double Time Twins. It's inspired by the pizza similar to it, made famous by John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever. It's a combination of our two favorite flavors, so the classic cheese pizza, which is extremely popular on here, and our extreme pepperoni.
So explain that. I think I saw this slice when I was walking in. How's it? What's it like when you order a slice of this?
It's a big piece of pizza. it's quite literally our two favorite pizzas cooked together. So you get a bunch of cheese, you get a bunch of pepperoni. It's a huge bite. It's a huge pull. It's a wonderful slice.
It's kind of like a club sandwich of pizzas, dough cheese toppings,
and then pepperoni. Yeah, you got it. It's a club sandwich.
Wow. So how did that idea come into being of just stacking pizza on top of pizza?
Well, Ava and Loretta gave me the idea, and it's a fantastic idea, and they got the idea literally from the iconic John Travolta scene in the Saturday Night Fever, where he's just walking down the street doing his strut and eating his double slice of pizza.
And speaking of pizza, I told you recently that Naked City Pizza has launched a new Sunday brunch menu. Well, they're also doing some upscale Friday night market meals out of the same location, which is their Paradise Road location. I dropped by there this week, and I spoke to Chef Chris Palmieri about that.
So my background obviously wasn't in pizza originally, coming off the Strip and from Buffalo. But, you know, we've done things throughout the years. We've been open for almost 15 years, so we've done a lot of different events and things like that, but I wanted something that kind of could stick a little more so people can get used to it, look forward to, want to do on a weekly basis. So we actually started with the pasta night, which is Tuesday. So, you know, four or five different pasta dishes, maybe one entree, just exploring things. I started going to farmers markets again, things like that, saw stuff, got inspired, wanted to do something, remind myself I could still cook. So we started with the pasta nights, and then it grew into, let's start a brunch, you know, something that we can offer on Sundays now with no football and everything. And then now, you know, Fridays we've been doing fish fry because it's a traditional Buffalo thing during Lent. Till Easter, so now that's over, I wanted something that I can do on Friday. So again, with going to the market, seeing all the cool products for the spring and how many more producers we have out here, I wanted to just start offering something. So I decided, like, let's offer something that people can either dine in, eat next door in the bar, take home, have it delivered, whatever, you know, just maybe like a 4 or 5 course meal that's affordable for two people, but giving them like the high end quality and technique and everything like that. So
okay, so let's start with the Friday night dinners. First of all, are they only at one location or are they at both locations? And then give me an example of what one of those meals would be.
Right now it's just out of the Paradise location. And like, for example, this week we have a bread course with, you know, focaccia, 72-hour fermented focaccia that we're doing, which we actually are offering daily now too, with a couple different spreads and butters. And then you have an appetizer course, which is going to be a black trumpet risotto this week with some shaved black truffles. Salad course. We're offering also like a Tuscan-style steak this week, so a filet and a New York strip with smashed potatoes, and then a dessert course. So, and every week I'm going to change it. I want to put it out by like Monday or Tuesday so people have enough time. I'm only going to offer about 8 of them a week on Friday nights. You know, if the excitement grows, maybe we'll add a Saturday night for it, but like for right now, just, you know, something to offer people a special and take a lot of care with it, you know.
Cool. And then tell me about the brunch menu that you're doing.
So the brunch menu is kind of just, you know, the same, more a mix of things that you don't necessarily have on our menu all the time. So like some breakfast pizzas, a little bit more like New York style pizza sometimes for a special, a few breakfast sandwiches, you know, just playing around with a bunch of stuff that we don't get to normally play around with here. So even some different types of sandwiches, breads, you know, things that we're, you know, our menu, we break our bread every day for the rolls, but we don't have, like, you know, fried bread. So we're doing one with that. We're doing burrata bites where it's basically fried dough served with burrata and some chili spread and basil pesto. So just having a lot of fun and just messing around with things.
How's it feel to get back to cooking slightly more elevated stuff for your local fans?
It's great. I get bored sometimes, you know, and I love pizza and I love wings, but, you know, I've been doing it for so long that once in a while it's nice to do something else. But it also, like, leads to inspiration for pizza. So, like, last Tuesday after we got done with pasta night, we had a little bit of this, a little bit of that left, and then the next day, you know, we decided to run a vodka pizza with burrata and, you know, spring onions and things like that. So it's awesome. I like just bringing ingredients in and then figuring it out. And then from there, I never want to waste anything. So we're always utilizing it, whether it's preserving it, drying it, whatever, you know. So we never want to let anything go to waste.
Chef Chris does have a great fine dining background. Oh. You know, he ran Diego for Rick Bayless and the MGM Grand, youngest executive chef on in the MGM family at the time that he did that. So he's fantastic. So support him. The Nth Whiskey Experience is coming to Wynn Las Vegas April 15th through 19th. It's actually a couple of experiences, but they overlap. And cool. I'm working on a longer interview with one of the organizers, Mikesh Patel, for a possible Neon News story. For now, here is Mikesh talking a bit about what to expect from this super high-end series of whiskey tasting events.
5-day experience featuring the finest, oldest, and rarest whiskeys on the planet. Brands like the Dalmore, Gordon MacPhail, the Glenlivet will be there, and some as old as 70 years old.
And everyone's talking about the upcoming eclipse like we're all fucking Connecticut Yankees in King Arthur's court and we're going to free the witch or something. I don't know. But Beer Park at Paris, Las Vegas, is throwing a viewing party starting at 10 a.m. on Monday, April 8th. There will be a bunch of brunch specials and a performance by Dan Fester. And best of all, they'll have complimentary viewing glasses so you don't burn out your eyeballs like your mom always warned you about.
That's right.
Reservations are recommended.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, it's my annual four-week push regarding Chefs for Kids. It's an organization with which we have both been involved with now for 3 years, and I'm starting that campaign today. The event is on May 4th.
We love Chefs for Kids.
We love Chefs
yes.
for Kids.
Something that gets me in a fucking suit every year. I think I've worn two different suits in 2 years, so
yeah.
I'm going to have to wear a third suit this year.
And it's a Kentucky Derby theme this year, so you can really jazz it up if you feel like it.
I don't see that happening, but I don't know.
So the event is on May 4th, Kentucky Derby Day, which is why the Derby theme, of course. Al and I, again, will be your hosts while you enjoy amazing food, drinks, auctions, both live and silent, and all of it goes to help food education in classrooms in the most needed areas. Chefs hold breakfast, teach a bit about healthy options in areas that would classify as food deserts, and the kids often go home with bags of provisions. Their website is chefsforkids.org if you need more information, or you can reach out to me directly on the socials at Wishbone and Vine. But the website will have information on donations, tickets. You can get a hold of us to offer auction and raffle items. You can get a list of what's going to be auctioned and raffled off pretty soon.
Do you and I need to have a little meeting and decide what we're going to auction off?
I think that sounds great.
We should do something.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
And if anybody wants to pair with us and help us out, please let us know. If you can donate your time, if you can donate a package, if you can donate straight to the organization, you know, just let us know how you want to help, and we will make sure you're talking to all the right people.
Cool.
Also, I'm super excited to announce that Chef Steven Kessler of Aroma Latin Cucina in Henderson made it to the finalist nominee round of this year's James Beard Awards in the Best Chef Southwest category, announced today as we record Wednesday, April 4th. Now we wait until June when they will hold the award ceremonies in Chicago to find out who wins that medal. More on this story is available on neonnews.vegas.
So just him. That's it. No Brian Howard in the finals. No Oscar Amador.
No Oscar. Man. No DJ Flores. No Brian. And no Kimmy and Josh over at Milkshop.
And they had all been semifinalists. So I appreciate they got mentioned. I got to say, you know, my old friend Robin Leach used to get very angry with the national media and the way that they would come here to do parties and events and celebrations, but then really ignore our restaurants, you know, at award time.
Yeah.
And his theory was that the people who are the decision makers have a kind of bias against Las Vegas. They don't believe that anything could be all that serious right. in a city like Las Vegas. I happen to like everybody I've ever met from James Beard Foundation, despite the fact they never nominated me for SHIP. That's okay. I don't really deserve it, and that's fine, but some people do. I like them. But that being said, I got to think that they've got the same fucking bias. They've got the same bullshit that people, you know, Vegas, it's not Vegas. Don't take Vegas seriously. You know, fuck it. Bring it on. I'll take that attitude because yeah. we are Vegas, you know. We hear the same shit from people in the sports world that, yeah. you know, make fun of what we do. Look, man, we'll be the villains. It's better here because you come to Vegas and our restaurants are not only fucking amazing, but you came to Vegas. I don't know where these other people in the Southwest are, but I bet it's not as fun to visit their restaurants as it is here. Look, nominations are what they are, man. Huge congratulations yes. to every single person in every single city that was nominated. I mean, anything that gets people out dining at
Absolutely.
Restaurants. But if I can inspire you to say, fuck the people that did not nominate Adam Abadio again, yeah. did not nominate Brian Howard, and let's all just go out to their restaurants and celebrate
Absolutely.
As well. And if you haven't been over to Aroma, by the way, fantastic.
Can I just
restaurant.
Tell you, I'm so glad I already have my weekend reservation before this announcement was made this morning, because a girlfriend
yeah.
and I were talking yesterday and made our reservation.
Yeah, this tiny little joint in a strip mall in Henderson, and now he's a finalist for James Beard Best Chef Southwest. We're never going to be able
line
to eat
out
there
the door.
Again. He deserves it. You know, I remember James Trees texting me like 6 months ago, like, why aren't more people supporting Steve Kessler yeah. over at Aroma? And he deserves every aspect, every bit of the attention that he's going to get. My anger over other people not getting it. Look, man, that's fucking life. You know,
right?
It's awards. It happens.
So here's another thing to get angry over.
Oh, okay. Who am I pissed off now?
A new members-only club is coming to downtown. It's called the Doberman, mm-hmm. and they don't have your typical, you know, wealth-based membership, or so they claim. I don't know. But when you go to check out their waiting list to become a member, mm-hmm. it has these like dive into your life best friend kind of conversation questions that they're asking you. And they're kind of really off the wall for something like this. They're trying to claim that they want a diverse and, you know, robust, you know, community, but it's not community. It's still a members only club. It's taking over the artifice. It's about 3,400 square feet. And already I am hearing things. If you're, I'm using air quotes here, people, and hand gestures. If you're looking at the barometer for whether people are accepting it or telling it to get the fuck out, most people are already on the get the fuck out list.
Yeah,
like, I haven't heard anything
will be
good.
Happy, and most people who get turned down will say get the fuck out, you know?
And
most people who are afraid they're going to be turned down will say get the fuck out to begin with, and I don't blame them.
So I'm just curious to all the listeners. I really want to hear what you have to think about this. I mean, it's in a wonderful spot in downtown. You know, the biggest comment that, you know, the biggest takeaway I've gotten from these comments is that they do not know their audience. They do not know what the hell should be there. And it's not that, in my opinion. Well, so
I mean, you know, one thing about Las Vegas that's very different than New York and also LA, although I hate LA, I love New York.
Yeah.
One thing that's different about Vegas is this is not a town where it pays to be cool. Like, if you live in New York City, you live in Los Angeles, you live in cities with a cool scene, being cool, being one of the cool kids on the cool kids list is, like, essential. Doesn't matter if you have money, doesn't matter whatever. You do a fucking weird slam poetry reading, you'll suddenly consider cool. You get invited into all the shit, right?
Right.
That's how it always was. Vegas is not that. It's not an exclusive town.
No.
It's a town where money talks, to be honest. And it's how much money you fucking have, not how cool you are. So this seems to be an attempt to kind of turn Vegas into a place where, and I was a guy who was obsessed with how cool I was for a good 15, 20 years of my life. Wanted to be backstage at every concert, wanted to be on every fucking guest list, right? And Vegas is just not that kind of scene. I don't see this catching on.
No, because unlike some other only membership only things that we have in Vegas, it's not a country club. It's not a home thing. It's not this, you know, super social club where there's other things going on where you can go and play tennis and have lunch and do all these other things. If it was more of that, I think that I would be at least willing to listen to more of it.
It's not a sex club, right?
No.
Because then, you know, you'd have my interest.
Right?
You know, if they were doing a strict interviewing process and only wanted the right kind of people.
Yeah.
I'd be very interested if it were a sex club.
But yeah, it's basically a bar with a membership. And that's where I'm kind of lost. So okay. I'm just curious what people think. That's my little rant and angry thing for the day.
And I think that's about it for this week. Huge thanks to our hosts here at Wino, Sean McClain and Nick Hetzel. And, of course, Richard's in the background. Thank you, Richard, and best of luck on your opening. And thank you to all of our guests, Eric Gladstone, Chris Palmieri, Bruce Bromberg, Mikesh Patel, and Richard Verhagen. For Samantha Gemini Stevens and our engineer, Rich Johnson, I am Al Mancini. Stay hungry.